Do you want to switch it around this time, Adam? And do you want to start off with the welcome, or do you want to keep it the same?
Let's keep it the same this time. I promise I will get ready to do it, but I'm not ready to do it. I like you introducing it, so it's good.
All right, hold on. Let me just think about what we're going to say. Latest episode, yada, yada. Are we calling... Oh, is it called... It? I should have asked Dan if he actually wants us to call it Stronger Together. I know that was the tagline of RSA. It feels awkward to say that out loud, Stronger Together. Hey, Adam, I feel stronger hanging out with you, man. Thanks so much.
I feel stronger with you, Ian. Stronger Together.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Challenge Accepted podcast. My name is Ian McShane. I'm VP of Strategy here at Arctic Wolf.
Hello, everyone. I'm Adam Mare, CISO of Arctic Wolf, and we're here to talk about RSA this week. A little bit different. We don't have a guest. It's just the two of us having a nice conversation about what we saw at the RSA conference in San Francisco.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the buzzwords, the booth designs, and really what we thought was interesting, a conference that has a reputation both good and bad.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get some takeaways on sort of where the cybersecurity industry is as a whole and just our general impressions. So let's get into it. All right, so it was great being in RSA this year. Great conference. I think it was really the first one where it seems like everyone's back from the pandemic or any disruption. We're in San Francisco. It just felt like everything was back to its full swing again. What did you think, Ian?
Yeah, it's a funny one because I've had some people say that they thought it was busier than last year. I've had other people say it wasn't as busy last year as it wasn't as busy this year as it was last year. Personally, it felt to me like there were a lot of vendors around and not many end user organizations, unless a vendor is an end user consumer or something else. It certainly felt like everyone I talked to, every badge I saw had a vendor name on it of some kind.
Yeah, I really do think that it's kind of gotten a reputation largely of being a vendor con in many ways, you know, almost vendor on vendor. I don't know if that's totally accurate. I do think there's quite a bit of other value there, but and maybe it was just this year in the macroeconomic environment or something. But I do know quite a few people who usually, you know, send someone from their security organization to the conference who didn't this year. But
yeah,
I will say, walk in the streets, walk in the hall. To me, it didn't feel smaller, but it has been a number of years since I've been there, so I'm probably not the best judge.
It did seem pretty busy. I mean, in full disclosure, I didn't actually get to any of the talks or the sessions at RSA this year. So it's probably hard to gauge the actual attendee type just from the vendor hall where you are actually surrounded by vendors. So maybe that's my clouded judgment.
Yeah, but I mean, I heard similar things to what you heard. But
yeah, I mean, personally, I have to say it was great to catch up with people that we work with that I haven't seen for a while, like you. I hadn't seen you in person, Adam, for probably about a year. I think it was May last year we last caught up in person. So
yeah, it was interesting. Both inside Arctic Wolf and outside the company, I felt like I was able to catch up with people that I haven't seen in person in quite a while. Mm-hmm. And even some, I mean, Arctic Wolf has grown so much over the last year since I've been here. There's some people I never met in person and had that weird, you know, I've only met you on Zoom situation where you're like,
you're taller than I thought.
You're shorter than I thought you were. And people look at you and, you know, they're thinking the same thing. So I did have a few of those moments.
Do you generally like security conferences as an attendee?
You know, it's a mixed bag for me. I do and I don't. I especially love conferences where we, you know, you get great technical presentations and I really enjoy those, or even some of the classes you can take. Also, just when it's a just huge mass of humanity and it's hard to get anywhere and go to a restaurant, I don't enjoy that part of it. So
yeah,
I don't know. I like some of the smaller conferences maybe. There's a great one in Utah where I live called SaintCon where you get some really high quality presentations and it's just not with the same, you know, number of people footprint. It's a great conference.
Yeah. I would have liked to have gone to B-Sides that precedes RSA conference. The bit I struggle with is because I've been in the vendor world for basically my entire adult life now. I don't remember what it was like to go to a show when I wasn't a vendor. Like, I don't remember what it was like to go as a practitioner. But I think you were probably a bit closer to that, right? You've gone, I assume you've attended as both law enforcement and as a end user organization, right?
Correct. Yes. In fact, this is my first time as a security vendor.
Oh, on the dark side.
Yeah. All the rest of the time, all the B-sides and all those I've gone to, it's always been as law enforcement, which there was, you know, we would try to go pretty incognito, but sometimes we were more or less welcome to some of the presentations.
Spot the Fed.
Yeah. So they think we're there to like catch people, which we weren't. We're just there to learn like everyone else. I mean, I'm sure there were others who were there to catch people, certainly not us. And then, as an end user, and I've really enjoyed a lot of those. Certainly building the relationships is great. But man, RSA was just huge.
Have you been to Black Hat recently? Like, I'm interested in the non-vendor comparison of RSA and Black Hat, because in case you haven't noticed, I've got a fairly jaded perspective on some of these conferences.
Yeah, no, I actually haven't in a number of years. It's been a long time. I used to, back when I was a Fed, I used to send friends to go to those and then come back and let me know what happened and things like that. But no, I haven't been in a number of years.
Yeah, I was going to say biggest worries, but that's not the right phrase to use. One of the observations I had prior to the pandemic was that Black Hat had moved away, was moving in the same direction as RSA instead of being, you know, primarily an educational forum for people to go and listen to interesting talks. It was becoming more of a selling tool or a demand generation tool for vendors, which was starting to get a bit frustrating.
Yeah, and I have also heard that, and I unfortunately think that's the situation.
One thing I was thinking about prior to RSA was how many booths were going to be slapped with stickers talking about ChatGPT. Like, I was expecting to see like ChatGPT everywhere, you know, intelligent bot this, AI bot that. But I guess a lot of the booth printing was finished before the rise of or the re-rise of AI, right?
Yeah, it really, I was expecting the same thing, generative AI everywhere. And you know what? I just didn't see it on all amongst all of the other buzzwords on the vendor booths. I heard that it was talked a lot about in some of the, you know, the talks and presentations.
That's what I was going to say.
So I think it was more contained to that. And I did, though, overhear and then heard myself when I was going around to some of the vendor booths, them talking, throwing AI into the conversation. So I definitely heard sort of a verbal slapping of the sticker on on the product, but not as much on the actual booths, I guess.
Yeah, I heard the same thing. I think there was one vendor, and I'm assuming we probably shouldn't mention vendors by name, but there was one vendor, I think, that announced the integration of some of that ChatGPT-like technology into their platform in the form of a chatbot, which, again, you know, isn't really new. And that's a funny thing. I think, you know, is it fair to say that marketing is trying to push generative AI and AI in general as the new hotness again, when the reality is, like, the security industry, if anyone, has been, you know, one of the fastest adopters of AI or machine learning, right?
Yeah, I do think, and we could probably have a whole show on that, but the hype around AI is a really interesting thing. I think both it does behoove organizations to look at this new generative AI, especially if they haven't been looking at it recently, to understand what the power of large language models is and you know, find value there if they can get value both, you know, within their product and across their organization. I mean, I think that's a really important thing to do. Mm-hmm. I also think it's important not to let your marketing team go crazy and overhype what's possible with it. And also not to, you know, jump the shark too early with your product itself. But this has real bottom line implications. I mean, I think there was a company recently that does education. I think it's Chegg.com. They do like education. And they mentioned the effect of generative AI on their bottom line. And their stock took a huge hit, like 30, 40% or something like that. Whereas I think if they controlled the message a little bit more, they may have been able, you know, if they're saying, hey, we're integrating this is how we're innovating, rather than, hey,
they took a hit because they said they were using it.
Yeah. So I mean, a lot of times we like to poke fun, like, you got everyone's getting on the bandwagon. But to some degree, if everybody's thinking about it, they do, you know, investor analysts and shareholders and everybody else, they want to know, hey, are you staying up with the latest hotness of AI? And you've got to have at least a story around it. Hopefully it's a true story. hopefully you're being accurate and helping guide people down the path of like, yeah, maybe it doesn't do what you think it does. And, you know, that doesn't mean what you think it means. But here's how we are using it. I think that's really important to do. And I think I saw some of that at the conference, and then also just people throwing it out to, you know, if we can make a sale because we have AI, that's great, right?
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, I thought this year there were less of the scareware type of headlines, and, you know, I certainly didn't see these, unless you buy this, you're going to get pwned. Like, there wasn't as much, like, scareware against, you know, about something like ransomware. I mean, there were still people hawking for badge scans left, right, and center. You mentioned an interesting point, like, my, around AI specifically, I've been very much on the team of eye rolling when I hear people talking about malware generated by AI or by ChatGPT. But one thing I did hear at RSA was a specific example of a proof of concept that uses an open AI like technology to rewrite its main Python code with every infection. So trying to avoid detection, almost trying to, you know, obfuscate its worm-like behavior, which I thought was an interesting take on it. Now, obviously, if you've got an environment that's got good detection and, you know, strong prevention capabilities, it's not necessarily going to change the game. But being able to mutate again is, again, proving how cyclical this industry is. If you think back to the early days of file-based malware and how things were specifically tailored to rewrite themselves to avoid heuristic-type rule detection.
Yeah, absolutely. It is interesting to see the cyclical nature of the industry. And I mean, I think those kinds of applications, you know, that you hear, you know, ChatGPT or whatever generative AI is going to help write phishing emails. And there's all these really obvious applications, although that one's a little clever. I hadn't heard that one, you know, until RSA. Yeah. But I'm interested to find out when people really get to dig in and spend some time with this, how it's going to affect, you know, both attackers and defenders. So once maybe some of the hype dies down, we can really dig into this as an industry. I am curious to see what sort of unanticipated things are going to come out of it. But I also did want to say that, like, I think there are real reasons why companies are all talking about AI. I just want to see where the rubber meets the road on this. But I was also curious, just so like, we've kind of, you know, dived into that subject, that particular, you know, hype model that's out there. But I'm curious, what was your sort of take on, especially down in the vendor hall, what was sort of your take on, you know, as much as that is sort of a funhouse mirror of our industry, you know, in mass, as a whole, what is your take on that? And what do you think it reflects on the industry, or at least how the industry is thinking about it?
My favorite thing to tell people that I saw at RSA was one vendor booth had an actual whack-a-mole game. And if that isn't the perfect analogy of cybersecurity, I don't know what is. I unfortunately didn't get to spend any time and see if they were, you know, linking that into their talks or if it was there for ironic reasons or just for entertainment, but I thought that was pretty great.
Oh, that is great. That is amazing.
But in general, what the most interesting thing to me, the most interesting and the most surprising thing this year was that the outside of the bigger vendors on the north side, the biggest booths in the south side seem to be startups, smaller organizations than I would expect to see having big booths. They were mostly the cloud security companies, but they had some enormous booth presence there. And I, you know, compared to their size and market penetration, I was pretty surprised.
Yeah. I think kind of what I was sensing, and, you know, this was just my subjective experience, but I think what I was sensing on the floor is you're starting to see this real, or maybe not starting, but it was definitely a reflection, like a real world reflection of kind of platform versus point solutions, right? So you had a lot of little booths and some, you know, medium-sized booths of point solutions, you know, very specific tools or services for a specific cybersecurity application, right? And then you have more of these platforms where people are trying to be platforms, you know, your Google Cloud, Microsoft, you know, all these big vendors. And I think, and maybe it's just a matter, but what I was seeing is a lot less interest around those point solutions and a lot more interest around the platforms. And in talking with other security leaders, I do think there is this, especially in this time of, you know, tightening the belt, this idea of, like, I'm looking at platforms, and I think we've talked about on the podcast before, you know, like, is it, you know, platform or best in class, right? Because sometimes you're making the choice between the two. And I think what I was seeing was maybe a lean toward platform. If I can get, you know, a 70, 80% solution and it's already on the platform I already have, I already know it integrates. If it's not, you know, a non-integration, like it's a real integration. It's there.
It's real. Yeah.
You know, I can get that value out of it, and I'm just going to go with that. So, you know, that was one of the things I think I was seeing while I was there.
The corollary to that, and now I'm second guessing whether that I've actually used that word correctly. The opposite view to that maybe is that I saw also a lot of people talking about platforms and the platformization of security. But what I took away from it was that we are at risk of perfect being the enemy of good. Like everyone's talking about being able to do everything you want from this tool on day one, like trying to... Zero Trust is a great example, because I've heard a couple of two or three talks from different vendors talking about Zero Trust, and they all seemed to be leaning into how, air quotes, because this is audio, but how easy it is to roll out Zero Trust to your entire organization. And I'm standing at the back thinking, for maybe that's fine for small organizations, but I would prefer, and this is where I want your perspective, Adam, is I would prefer to take bite-sized chunks and get it right, maybe by attack surface, maybe by group, and really think about least privilege in that group, rather than similar to how MFA used to be described as, oh, it's too hard to do everything, I'm not going to do it at all. So hearing all these big talks about our platform can take everything you've got and roll it all into one thing and, you know, build your security platform all at once seemed a little bit scary.
Yeah, that is daunting. I mean, if you're at like the perfect moment in your growth as a business, there might be just a great moment for you to jump on a platform like that. And then as you grow, you can grow into it and you don't have to do a lot of rip and replace. But almost no one has the money to spend when they're at that moment to do that kind of rollout. So yeah, I think it, you know, obviously they can make it sound easy, but that can be really hard.
Yeah.
I think where a platform like that can really shine is where they can either just work well with what you have existing right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And integrate with that, or it's something that you can do piece by piece, right? Like I can roll out this year, and the next year I can buy this additional license or this additional item and I can roll that out. But it is all part of the platform, and I can replace what I have or roll out something new. I think that's a much more realistic model, because trying to do a holistic, I'm just going to completely change my environment, lift and shift, or however people want to, it's always way harder than you think it's going to be. And it's always going to take longer. It's like remodeling your house, right? It's always going to take longer, more money.
Exactly.
Supposed to be in there by Christmas. It's Easter. You're not in yet. It's going to be something like that.
And, you know, I realize that the folks that are talking are trying to sell the dream of ease and simplicity and security, right? But hearing people say, oh, all you have to do is add your cloud API keys and we'll take care of everything else for you, has red flags and alarm bells ringing at the top of their lungs.
Yeah, I do think another challenge for the platforms, and I think you and I noticed this. We took a moment. We were walking around together, kind of look at the booths, and when you get that large, or you have that many different elements to your solution, you can have every buzzword slapped on the side of your booth or the box, and it just becomes like, well, what do you do? Like, I look at the vendor, I'm like, so I've heard of you, and now you have every buzzword in cybersecurity, and what do you do? Like,
I felt
what
like
is it
threatened.
That you're actually doing here? What's the value you bring? And it can be kind of, you can get lost in the noise.
I felt like Threat Intel was that badge of honor this year. Like almost every single booth, whether it was cloud, endpoint, I don't even know what, you know, everything, API security, it had this label of Threat Intel, Threat Intelligence on the side, whether they were consuming it, using it, producing it, I don't know what, but it seemed like that was the phrase that was around. I was surprised to see that so much more than AI, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it's true. We definitely saw a lot of that. So was there anything at the show that you were particularly excited about or thought might have some promise or would be something you want to take another look at?
I mean, I still feel like as an industry, we try and cater towards the cutting edge. So again, talking about being able to roll stuff out and deploy it, and having spent, you know, so long talking to normal organizations, right? Not the haves of the world that, you know, have unlimited budget and unlimited people to throw at it. I still feel that there's a huge amount of the market that is not catered for, because these tools don't run themselves. These tools are not cheap. And when you're catering for the, you know, top 100 organizations globally, that's how you communicate with the rest of the market. And I think it alienates some of these customers that can't do it. But there was someone that both of us were talking to that was, you know, that attended either your talk or my talk, right, at our booth. And they were saying that they were getting frustrated at having to have this conversation, because they were a construction company, I think. And they were getting, you know, they were getting frustrated trying to communicate how important cybersecurity is to a construction company, but no one comes and markets to them because they're not, you know, on the cutting edge of technology or something.
Yeah, I do remember that conversation. And it was interesting to me that I think there is another assumption that if you're not a tech company or if you're not in heavily in tech, that you don't understand cybersecurity and don't care about it. And here we have, you know, some representatives from a construction company come up through that company and they're as concerned or more concerned than anyone else and really understand the space. And we're trying to figure out, you know, what the right solutions for them are. So I think it is a really good point about, you know, focusing on the whole market and not just the largest enterprises.
Just making it more accessible is really what it is. Like, you know, I think, and that's nothing new for this year. I know you said, what did I take away from this year? But it's the same old thing. It's like, it's just not accessible, or it's not as accessible as I think it should be. Like, we should be as an industry focused on making security usable by anyone.
Yeah, really that sort of demystification of it. And then also maybe some of these enterprises need to get a little bit better at saying like, here's the everyday solution. And yes, we have the super complex or solution that's, you know, really mature for a large organization, but we can also serve you at the, you know, SMB size or, you know, in whatever vertical you're in.
Yeah. What about you? So obviously I've been vendored for my entire life, but you're straddling that post of being a representative of a vendor, but also a consumer of a lot of this technology, or, you know, at least a dare I say it, someone with purchasing authority, right? So what did you have? What did you take? Actually, did anyone ask you if you had purchasing authority? Because I think that's a great question I used to hear a lot.
No, they didn't. I tried to be fairly incognito, did not want to let anybody know what I do for a living, because as soon as I do, it's like blood in the water and here come all the sharks. But and yes, I did compare salespeople to sharks, but I didn't get a lot of that, but one thing I got a little excited about is I saw a couple of vendors for secure browsers, and it's one of those things where you're like, I know an idea is good when I'm hearing it explained to me and I think, well, duh, of course. Like, and then you ask yourself, well, why hasn't anyone else done this?
You know, I've done this before, right?
Yeah. And there are usually detailed reasons of why it hasn't worked that well before and what the shortcomings were, but there are a couple of maturing solutions now in that space, and there's some great applications for it, like contractors or, you know, interns or other segments of your employee population that you want to control. Like in the case of contractors, I don't want to have to send them equipment, but maybe I can just, you know, let them log in and force them to log in through a secure browser where I can see everything on it and not allow them to take anything outside of it, almost like they got a virtual desktop or something like that, but it's much more lightweight than that. Some pretty cool innovations and solutions there that I'm taking a look at. So
is that like the new thin client, like you mentioned, instead of sending out hardware, is it the replacement for Citrix and stuff like that?
Exactly. And it's like, you know, orders of magnitude easier to administer and for people to use, frankly. And the speed is, because it's just a browser, right? Now we're just controlling it. And you're avoiding a lot of the problems of having to like fork Chromium or something like that. Uh-huh. And then you own that fork. And it's, you know, they're doing it in different ways than that so that they don't have to do that. And it's just layered on top. So that was one thing that I thought was interesting. And then the other space I'm curious and watching is the SSPM space, which is, you know, most people are familiar with CSPM, Cloud Security Posture Management. This is SaaS Security Posture Management, which is where they're essentially doing the same thing for your, you know, your cloud, your AWS, your GCP, or whatever it is, but they're doing it with all the different various SaaS solutions you have. So Salesforce or NetSuite or Google Cloud or Microsoft 365, whatever it is, right? And, you know, basically hitting all those and making sure that you have all the right security configurations set up and all of those. I mean, of course, they're going to live and die by, do they integrate with all of the SaaS providers that we have as an organization and things like that. But that is a really cool, and I know, you know, there are large companies that have it. There's point solutions. It's an interesting space that I'm watching to see if, you know, some real value can come out of that, because, you know, we've all seen the data breach reports. We know how many times a misconfiguration in a SaaS service is what, not just the cloud services like S3 buckets, but also a SaaS service, right? Like you might have not all had the right security configuration set up.
Yeah. One of the almost jokes of certainly a RSA conference is always the amount of swag that gets given away, and you know, folks that buy a badge to come and just collect swag and I don't know, sell it on eBay. Did you actually see any interesting swag? I, full disclosure, I actually didn't come away with any swag this year. I didn't get the chance to really figure out who was giving away anything interesting.
Yeah, no. First of all, I should caveat this with, I am not a swag guy. So if I come home with an extra backpack or socks or a mug, it's probably going to end up at Goodwill or something, but, or maybe with my kids if they're interested in it. But no, I didn't. So I don't have a great eye for that, but I didn't see anything super interesting. I love the Red Bull Racing water bottles that we gave out at one point. Plug. So that so that was a cool one. But
that's a night to our sponsors.
No, yeah. I mean, there were some fun t-shirts and things like that I saw, but nothing major.
The one thing I missed this year, so up before the pandemic, there was this growing trend of, instead of giving out swag, some of the smaller vendors would make donations to an animal shelter. And I can't remember this specific vendor, but it was always in the walkway between the two main halls. And on the last day of the conference, they would have, you know, an animal shelter bring in a bunch of puppies or a bunch of kittens and stuff. And you could go, you know, get your badge scanned to go and pet some animals or something like that, which felt like not only a good way to, I guess, chase the pointless badge scanning metric, but actually do some good for the community. And like you say, rather than just give away t-shirts that are going to end up in a landfill or in, you know, Goodwill, that felt like a much better way to spend some money.
Absolutely. I love that idea. Much like they, a number of years, they sort of wrote some policies around who can be around the booth to attract people to it. I like that they tighten up those rules to get rid of that culture. And
absolutely,
it might be good to have maybe a little bit more muted culture around swag, and let's do more things like donate to charities. I actually really love that idea.
I like that. Yeah. I'm trying to be a bit more ethical with things rather than just produce more crap.
Yeah. And I guess for me, so stepping back, sort of my last take on the conference for me was, if I'm looking at it, like I'm looking at the, whole landscape of, you know, cybersecurity, especially from a vendor standpoint, is it really seems like to me we've hit like peak number of vendors. I think someone's done a calculation that there's 5,000 or 6,000 different cybersecurity vendors worldwide. Maybe that's a low estimate. I don't know, but
I think there's more than that, right?
Yeah. To me, it just seemed like, well, that was borne out by what I saw. I know if you look at the reports of like the amount of investing and M&A activity, you know, it peaked a few years ago and it's been sort of steadily coming down. I think my prediction, I think we're going to see is a sort of a great consolidation in some of these point solutions of like, you know, preventing left-handed people on Tuesdays from clicking on phishing links. Are going to be, you know, either run out of business or they're going to be subsumed in some larger corporations. We're going to see a bit of a consolidation across the industry. But that's just sort of my take. I mean, it didn't quite feel like, you know, pets.com, you know, the web in the 90s, but kind of close in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think the capitalist economy over the last 10 years has really enabled a lot of investment, which means that there are a lot of companies that are, in my opinion, providing very small features that should be part of a bigger problem-solving platform, right? So exactly as you say, I think that, you know, this industry has talked about vendor consolidation from the side of the consumer or the end user organization for a long time, about trying to get this mythical single pane of glass, this thing that manages everything and can bring everything into one usable, manageable platform. I think you're definitely right. I think there's just too many vendors for the amount of money or the amount of humans that can actually operate these things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we'll see that. But I think another takeaway is that it's definitely, the industry is definitely alive and well. So
it certainly is. And what a way to end. Well, like I said, it was good catching up with you in person. It's great to compare notes about RSA as well and make sure that we all, you know, took away the right things. So thanks everyone for listening. Thanks for hanging out, Adam.
Yeah, it's been great. And thanks everyone.